Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition. Lots to talk about today. Media 2.0 is coming. What is that? And what does it mean for you? Media blackout. Huge scandals are ignored. How come? Seattle is offering a white fragility class. You can sign up for that if you'd like to. It's only $40. Coddled kids struggle. We'll talk about that. World's 10 most livable cities and more. All of that's coming up on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us today here on 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link also at the trumpet.com and a variety of other platforms as well. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. And lots of interesting things to talk about. Of course, the Olympics are wrapping up, I guess. They're coming to a close here pretty soon. The news has had the thing with the swimmers from the U.S., and that's kind of been one of those stories. That's it's funny that they made such a big deal out of it, and I mean it does reflect poorly on the U.S. But the problem is that they lied, or they at least somewhat fabricated their stories, and it's funny how that's top headlines, but there's so many bigger lies that are constantly happening from major public leaders, and those are just kind of pushed to the side.
Apparently, a few swimmers trying to possibly vandalize a gas station bathroom is bigger than all the scandals in government today.
So I guess it depends on what they put the emphasis on, but there's been one Olympian who actually lost his medal. This is the only instance so far. A male weightlifter from Kyrgyzstan became the first athlete at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics to be stripped of a medal after a positive drug test. Izat Artikov, something along those lines, tested positive for strychnine. That's rat poison.
Ooh.
After he won the bronze medal in the 69-kilogram division, the medal was taken away. He was kicked out of the games. Strychnine is defined as a stimulant in the World Anti-Doping Agency's list of banned substances. So I've heard of a lot of different things, but I didn't know they use rat poison.
It seems like that would just maybe strengthen your immune system. I don't see why it would help you lift weights.
They said that it's, of course, it's an extremely toxic pesticide used for killing rodents. However, they say it does actually have a long history of sports doping. If they use very small amounts, they say it actually will tighten tired muscles. And then I guess eventually kill you. But for a while, it will tighten your muscles. So they say strychnine was reportedly commonly used in the early years of the Tour de France to help cyclists survive the demanding rides. So that's a new one for me, but apparently that's been used for some time.
Yeah, it's amazing to think how these different anti-doping agencies come up with all the banned substances. In a lot of different sports, marijuana isn't a banned substance, and yet some people get a pretty big advantage from something like that even.
How did they figure that out? You know, who was the one that was it a scientist, or was it just somebody that said, hey, let's take a little bit of this and see what happens?
It seems like you'd have to administer it to a human being to figure out the effects of it.
Yeah, it's a bad idea. Stay away from the strychnine. If you're doing anything, just avoid it at all costs. Interesting report here today. It's called Media 2.0 is Coming. And there's, of course, changing media over the last few years. I think everyone's aware of that. We talk about all the different platforms you can listen to KPCG.fm on. That wasn't possible a few years ago, but now it is. And they say the media industry is on the cusp of a major shakeup, and the revolution will not be televised. In other words, television is changing.
It's still hard to access a lot of content if you don't have a television, though. I know everyone's saying that things are transitioning over to the internet, but it really is a limited version of what you can find on your TV channels.
One of the things that's really keeping TV kind of in the mix is live sporting events,
right?
Because people want to watch. If you look at the top 10 programs on network television, three of the top 10 are football games. Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football. And then there's like another version of that, like the NFL. I think they counted the NFL. No, actually, it was a pregame. It was the Sunday night pregame. That was the third one. Mm. So it was the two games, the Sunday night game, the Thursday night game, and then the pregame. So that's a huge revenue maker. And even in the cable packages, one of the things that keeps people getting cable is ESPN because of the sports. But even that's somewhat changing now. They think because they're trying to figure out ways to get people live sports. And if they can do that, they think it's really going to shift.
And a lot of these different online services, even if they do offer live events, they're still tied to the TV channel. So, I mean, I think it would take a lot to separate all of that content from the TV entirely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it progresses. They say if you regularly follow the markets, it's no secret that traditional media is dying a slow death. People are spending less time watching TV. Cable subscriptions are plummeting. And that's kind of what they're really looking at is the cable, I guess. And they call it cutting the cord, you know, people getting rid of their cable packages. The complaint people have is that, you know, I want five channels, but I've got to buy 50, and I don't watch the other 45.
Exactly.
They use the example of if you subscribe to Sports Illustrated magazine, and they said, yeah, no problem, but you've got to get, like, Wine Monthly, and you know, I forget what examples they use. People would say, no, I don't want those, though.
Yeah, that's the same thing. If you sign up to, like, a streaming service for a specific sports league, only recently did they start letting you just buy the games for the one team you like. And so finally they're figuring out, yeah, we have to streamline this so that people can pay less for what they actually want to see instead of paying a lot more for things they don't want.
They say by the end of this year, 20% of cable and satellite subscribers, that's a 1 in 5 subscribers, plan on canceling their pay subscriptions. And now that's what they plan on doing. I mean, I don't know if they will. But it's mainly Americans aged 25 to 34 that are really watching less TV than they did in 2010. The 18 to 24-year-olds are watching an astounding 37% less. So the younger you get in the population, less are watching TV and they're going to their other devices. They're spending a ton of time with content. It's just where they're getting it from.
Yeah, it's not like we're getting away from screens and this is a positive statistic, really. It's just... We're switching to a more convenient screen that we can fit in our pockets, and that's basically the trend right now.
They say, especially the younger Americans are spending all that time less with the TV, but they're spending a lot more time on the other devices, and I guess it's probably no surprise there. Between 2013 and 14, the amount of time spent watching television shows online skyrocketed 50%, and that's just in that one year. And so what's happening is people are, they're still wanting the content, but what they want is they want what they want when they want it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to say, well, I've got to wait until Tuesday night at 7:30 to watch this show. I'm just going to watch it whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, and a lot of people want to start maybe if they really like a TV show, they want to start from the beginning. So watching it when it comes on TV doesn't really matter because they're 10 seasons behind as it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of the new way that people watch TV shows. They don't just wait an entire week to watch one episode. They watch 40 episodes in one week.
Right. They say that in America and the UK, roughly 40% of all serialized television shows are being watched online instead of during traditional TV programming. So they're people are still getting their content, and that's the thing that doesn't change, is that people want content. They want quality content. It's just the way that they get it's different. And so people are trying to figure out how do you monetize this. You know, the big companies that are losing money from the traditional model are trying to figure out, like, okay, what do we do to keep making money on these things? And because the ad revenue is what keeps a TV going.
Yeah.
But if you're watching it online, they still advertise, but it's in a different way.
Yeah, if you're not too interested in being on the cutting edge of technology all the time, you can get some amazing deals on different cable packages or like newspaper subscriptions, things like that, because people are moving away and they will cut the price just to get more people into it.
Sometimes it seems like they'll give you a freebie.
Yeah.
just to get the subscription numbers up. But it's interesting though, because like we were saying here, it's not like people are going away from screens. It's just the type of screens. Consumers spend 50 plus hours per week using a screen.
Oh,
that's a lot of time. 40-hour work week, 50 hours on the screen. Of course, some of that overlaps, but that's a lot of time sitting down looking at something. Or walking if you're playing Pokemon Go.
Walking off a cliff playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
Actually, a week ago, I saw a group of teenage boys standing right outside the front campus gate, and I was wondering what they were doing, but then my wife figured out it was probably Pokemon Go. They were all looking at their phones and they were yelling at each other.
Yeah.
It's just really strange.
Yeah. I've seen some groups around different areas too. And you think, what are they doing? But they must be probably playing that game. There's this new report here from the Diffusion Group. The amount of time consumers spend each week using a screen, this includes televisions, personal computers, tablets, and mobile phones, now tops those 50 hours. The research firm noted that the average screen time spent on social networks now totals about 4 hours per week, of which 63% is used on services like Instagram. And that's why a lot of people are providing content, video content especially, using social media platforms. You can tweet out videos now. They can't be that long, but still. So people are using a lot of that new technology.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine how you could use 4 hours on a social media platform, but I have seen a lot more links to different videos. So it's kind of like the basis. If you want to get news from a place or, you know, latch on to more entertainment, they put it on social media because they know people are there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it really, in a lot of ways, it's amazing, some of the new technology. It's just a matter of people trying to figure out how to use it. And again, this report is looking at, like, how do you monetize it? And but we could also look at it from the aspect of, or from the perspective of, that's a lot of time to be spending on a screen. You know, that was always a thing, you know, last, I guess, couple of decades, there was always talk about people are spending too much time watching TV. And now it's even more time is being spent, but it's split across these different platforms.
Yeah, now we have the screen in our hands, so we're always looking down and sort of becoming humpbacks because of where the screen is located in relation to our bodies. It's just all these different side effects are popping up because we're just changing the way we look at screens, but it's actually for the worse.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to see how it is changing and how that will change over the next, I don't know, few years. Will be interesting to find out. This is interesting also in regards to the media. This is from investors.com. I mean, the media is, it's really interesting to look at what they report and what they let go by quietly into the night. This relates to a story you talked about the other day, the bizarre media blackout of hacked George Soros documents. We talked about that at length. George Soros had some of his documents stolen, and you haven't heard much about it. Very, very little about it. And so they're saying, hey, wait a second. How come the media is not reporting on some of these big scandals?
So just trace back his ideology and who he supports. He supports the current administration a lot. He supports Hillary Clinton. We have also seen the media sort of being slanted toward that side. It does kind of make sense when you trace it back to its roots that they would try to hide someone's links like that.
And that's what they're saying in this write-up here from investors.com. They say leaked documents released a few days ago provide juicy insider details of how a fabulously rich businessman has been using his money to influence elections in Europe, underwrite an extremist group, target U.S. citizens who disagree with him, dictate foreign policy, and try to sway a Supreme Court ruling, among other things. Pretty compelling stuff, right? They ask. They say, not if it involves leftist billionaire George Soros. In this case, the mainstream press couldn't care less.
It actually goes against good business, too, because the left is so interested in trying to push their own agenda and hide anything that goes against their agenda that they're avoiding stories like this that would get a lot of clicks, get a lot of reads. It just doesn't fit into their narrative.
They say that, you know, it was on Saturday, I guess, last Saturday, a group called DC Leaks posted more than 2,500 documents going back to 2008 that it found in Soros' Open Society Foundation servers. Since then, the mainstream media has shown zero interest in this gold mine of information. They said that they couldn't find a single story on the New York Times, CNN, Washington Post, CBS News, or other major news sites that even noted the existence of these leaked documents, let alone report on what's in them. That's pretty stunning. It's, you know, I know from the news business, because I've worked in the news, I know that the big thing every day is the assignment desk. Hey, what are we going to talk about today? What's the big news? What do we need to report on? This is a freebie.
Yeah.
How about this? But it doesn't fit into what they want to talk about.
You just know that story is coming across the assignment desk and someone sees it and says, we're not covering that. Everyone knows this is happening. Everyone knows it's big news. And yet a lot of outlets aren't covering it. I had to find it on Fox News. They're obviously a lot different than most of the mainstream media. I've also noticed on their website, they've started posting articles under this headline bias alert, and then it has a colon, and then it will introduce the headline.
Yeah.
So it's starting to specifically point out things like this, where certain stories are hidden and other stories are pushed to the top.
Well, the reality is, I think that's why a lot of talk radio is so popular, especially conservative talk radio. Drudge Report is so popular because they are reporting on things that these other liberal media outlets don't want to talk about, and people are interested. The numbers speak for themselves. That's why everyone's going to those other places, because they're interested in what they're reporting. Thomas Lifson, writing in the American Thinker blog, said, Soros got the U.S. and other accomplices to intervene in the internal affairs of a sovereign state. How is this not huge news?
Yeah, how is he not even in huge trouble for this? It seems like there should be some sort of law he broke in all these documents.
Oh, yeah. The investors.com writes, how indeed? And then they say, if Soros were a rock-ribbed conservative who supported Republican candidates and causes, you can bet that a swarm of reporters would right now be lustily tearing into these documents, determined to expose any and every shred of evidence of influence, peddling, and misdeeds. But because Soros is a hardcore leftist, he apparently gets a pass. Shameful. That's what they write.
Yeah, it's amazing that they're actually making an investment to push an agenda, because you know it's costing them a lot of viewers and a lot of readers to blatantly hide stories like this, but it's worth the monetary sacrifice to them to make sure that their agenda wins out, to make sure that their candidates take control of the country. That's most important.
So it is it's a bad deal when a lot of the media is showing one side of the story, because again, that's, you see that in a lot of nations. You see that in North Korea. Mm-hmm. You can see that in communist Russia, and probably Russia now even. You can just see those things where you can only report certain sides of things, and it's all, you know, it's just a mouthpiece for whatever the leading power is. And that's apparently what's happening with some of these media outlets.
Yeah, it seems like America's turning into a nation like that, where so many of the media outlets are just paid shills of the government almost. I mean, maybe they're not literally paid by the government, but they are definitely supporting the current administration's agenda. They're always leaning toward one side. You take the example of, you know, a publication like the New York Times. The founder of this radio station, Mr. Gerald Flurry, has said that that used to be the greatest news source you could find. Look at it now. It's just so, you just look at the top headlines and they're just all attacks on Trump. Something has, something big has changed with that publication specifically.
Yeah. Donald Trump calls them fiction.
They used to be the gold standard, and look at them now.
Yeah. There might be some truth to that. So it is, interesting to see, how the media changes in a lot of ways. And, what they choose to report and not report. But again, with the openness of the internet, it does allow a lot of people to get out there and say some things. And so there are people that have risen sort of out of this quagmire. A lot of times pretty extreme, but at the same time, at least maybe occasionally they'll hit on something of value.
Yeah, if you're looking for truth and if you're looking for the real news, it's out there. You can find it. A lot of it's on thetrumpet.com, by the way.
By the way, full disclosure, yeah. Yeah, definitely check out thetrumpet.com. We live stream from there as well. Over the weekend here, we have the Trumpet Hour Weekend Review program that'll be coming up as well. Want to highlight that. And also, if you're not a subscriber already to the Trumpet Weekly Report, make sure you get that. It's a free PDF news document. It gets sent to your email inbox every Friday, free of charge, and it goes through the big headlines of the week and tries to put them together. And gets rid of all the nonsense, pushes that aside, and talks about the stuff that actually has some relevance to it.
Yeah, all the new readers, they'll immediately notice how only a fraction of that entire PDF is about America. You look at the major websites, they're all about the political cycle. There are things that are happening outside of the borders of the U.S.
Surprisingly, there are other people out there.
Very important things.
Other people in the world that are doing things that are very important. This story is next one here is not all that important, but it is ridiculous. This is, of course, one of our favorite things is the "Of course, this is happening" segment. This is going on here in Seattle, which is an interesting city. I've been to Seattle; it's a nice place, in part. It says, how to cope with white fragility. Academic sells out her $60 workshops designed to improve Caucasians, quote, low emotional tolerance for discussing racism. So apparently this is a major need, and it's only $60. So if you got an extra $60 and you're in the Seattle area, I mean, it's sold out, but maybe you could get a ticket somehow.
It's pretty interesting if even in a progressive city like Seattle, whites are not very tolerant of discussing racism. You'd think they'd be most receptive to a topic like that somewhere like Seattle.
So what happens here, I guess, is City of Seattle is offering this class to help people understand this, quote, white fragility. The lectures are delivered by academic and author Dr. Robin DiAngelo. Workshops are designed to help white people, quote, tolerate racial stress. Quote, this is a quote, they say, when white people are challenged in cross-racial situations, white fragility triggers a range of defensive moves. That's one of the ads for the class. So this teaches you how to deal with situations correctly.
Isn't that amazing? Just any white person who objects to statements like we're racist because it's in our DNA, now you can be just called fragile. You're part of that group that has white fragility.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I have heard that thrown out there that certain people would be more prone to racism because it's in their DNA. And then I think, well, why bother with a class like this then, right? You can't help it. It's like if you were super tall and you wanted to be shorter, well, it's in your DNA. You can't change it. So you go to class on how to look shorter. I mean, yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah, this shouldn't be like a social justice type class. It should be like a biology or a genetics class to literally change the DNA.
Well, that's what they say. You got to change your DNA. So I hope there's a lot of science going on there. Of course, we were in jest there about a lot of that, but it is it just highlights some of the stuff people are spending their time on, and really just a lot of nonsense. Some people say that this is a great class. A lot of others say it is not.
Well,
so make up your own mind. Yeah,
the facts do not support widespread oppression of most of the country. So people who object to that should not be called sensitive about it.
Well, I don't know exactly. Apparently, if somebody, I guess in this case white people, are accused of being racist, they need to know how to handle it correctly instead of denying it and being angry about being accused. That seems like that would be the natural response.
Just
for
admit
most
that
people.
You're a racist, basically.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Say you're sorry.
Unbelievable.
I'm not sure. So that's what's going on in Seattle this weekend, in case you need some plans. So yes, of course that's happening. That lots of things are happening, and of course that is one of them in this day and age. Very interesting. But it is a nice town. Beautiful landscape out there in some areas. So you were just out there, actually.
Right. The people are really quirky and entertaining. Every one of them I just had the most hilarious conversation with. And then the next person I would meet was even more funny. They're just really open about how they feel and just their beliefs and things like that. So I actually was thoroughly entertained by being up there with them.
You went too early. You could have got in on this class if you
missed out.
You missed out on it. Well, there'll probably be another one. There's a new Key of David program this weekend. It's here on KPCG. Make sure you listen for this. The title is The Two Anointed Ones. The book of Zechariah pinpoints two leaders who God uses in this end time to receive the precious golden oil of God's truth, as it's described in the Bible. You need to understand who these men are, very specific individuals there. There's two booklets that you can get for free. I guess actually kind of books are pretty good size. Zechariah, The Sign of Christ's Imminent Return, and Who is That Prophet? That program, you can watch the video online at thetrumpet.com, and you can get the literature for free there. It'll be on television this weekend. It's on YouTube. You can listen to the audio here on kpcg.fm or download the archive version. So we're Media 2.0. You can get it all over the place.
Every platform. We just bombard you with a deluge of an avalanche of content.
You can't. There's no excuse for not not listening or watching, because it's around. So make sure you check that out. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. A new program today as well, talking quite a bit about what really is huge, huge news. Yet it's not making the headlines as much as you would think it should. ransom payment to Iran for the U.S. hostages. The White House denied it. They denied it. Now they're like, yeah, actually, that's kind of what happened. That's so crazy.
We were talking about before the show, it's pretty smart to wait about a week and a half or 2 weeks and then say, oh, yeah, we didn't say it was a ransom before, but now basically we're saying it's a ransom, because people move on from these news headlines so quickly. That's old news now, that ransom payment. It's a good time to bring up the facts, because people have already forgotten what happened.
Yeah, and it seems very specific that they kind of do it this way, and the media is complicit. Politico says this about it. The top spokesman for the State Department offered no apologies Friday after it confirmed that the United States conditioned the release of $400 million cash to Iran on the departure of American prisoners held in Tehran, arguing that it would have been, quote, foolish and imprudent to pay the money without getting them out of the country. During an interview with MSNBC's Morning Joe, spokesman John Kirby remarked that he could not speak for everything said previously by the White House about the deal, but added that President Barack Obama was, quote, very open about this at the time back in January. Make sure you listen to the Trump Daily Radio Show. He's got some good quotes in there, some good audio sound bites. It didn't sound real open to me.
Did you hear him say anything about that back in January?
I heard him say a lot of things, but nothing about this. I must have not been listening. I must have been looking at the wrong channels.
I must be blind and deaf.
It's interesting to see this happen now. And again, it doesn't really make the headlines. I mean, I think Drudge had it as a top story yesterday, maybe, for a while. Fox has had some. It's maybe been on a few others, but I haven't seen it. And if it has been, it's always way down at the bottom. Like, hey, never mind. But, yeah. Look at these swimmers. They didn't tell the truth about something. Never mind about that ransom payment.
Shame on the swimmers and not the government that's kind of involved in the same type of lies.
Pretty amazing. Really important program there on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that and the Key of David program that is coming up on the weekend here on KPCG.FM. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about kids being coddled. It doesn't work out very well. That's coming up next on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live. You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. KPCG is sponsored by the Philadelphia Church of God. The Philadelphia Church of God also produces the Trumpet Daily television program. The Trumpet Daily is presented by Stephen Fleury and focuses on world news, history, and the connection between current events and Bible prophecy. The Trumpet Daily is available online on YouTube, through podcasts, and on its website, thetrumpet.com.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And you can email us any questions, comments, concerns, or anything to comments at kpcg.fm. So we are out there in all kinds of ways. Don't forget about the TuneIn app also. You can listen to KPCG there on your smart device. And if you'll use iTunes, you can find most of the programming, I think all the programming here on KPCG on iTunes as well. Podcasts, radio, TV, social media, we got it covered.
We're swarming.
It's all over the place. This is an interesting little blurb here about kids. Sometimes they can regrow fingertips. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
I didn't either. This is from How Stuff Works. It's just kind of a neat little website. They say hand and wrist injuries made up 11.3% of all U.S. emergency room visits, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Some of these injuries are graver and result in a fingertip being totally liberated from its fellow digits.
Oh.
That's one way to say it. Usually that means it's gone forever, but here's something weird. In children, a fingertip can grow back. Not saying you should try this, but it can happen. Not always, but it happens. They say take a 7-year-old girl that Dr. Christopher Allen recalls in an article on the University of Washington's HS News beat. The girl lost her fingertip after putting her finger in the spokes of her brother's bicycle. That's something kids do sometimes. You shouldn't do that. That's bad for you. apparently. The doctors opted to stick it back on. 8 weeks later, the injured fingertip had died, and a new one had materialized. Crazy, right, they say? The same thing doesn't happen with adults, and figuring out why not could be the key to understanding how to regenerate lost limbs. So this doesn't always happen, but in some cases, with the kid, like in this case, a new one grew.
That's probably a good thing just because of, you know, the types of innocent mistakes that kids can get into. My brother, when he was really young, was feeding a horse, and he held out a carrot, and the horse bit off his entire fingernail, probably part of the tip of his finger, but it grew back totally normal. His entire nail's back, so... Wow. I don't know if that would have happened if he was a bit older.
He was horsing around. Thank you. We'll be here all week.
Here's a carrot and also my fingertips.
Gotta be
for a snack.
Gotta be careful with those horses. He didn't know where to stop. But they say it's not just little kids or fingers that have shown regenerative powers in humans. There is a case study of a 15-year-old boy that saw the regeneration of the tip of his big toe after an injury. So they think that the human body can regenerate. It's just that it has to be unlocked to do it. You know, you've got to figure out what to do to make it kick into that mode. And in some cases, it's worked for a few people.
Who knew we're kind of like salamanders when they lose their tail and the whole thing comes back?
Yeah. Now, again, don't try it. These are rare cases. But still, they also said there's a study out there that there's this new... I don't know exactly what it is, some sort of compound that they've devised that they're using for dental work, and it's regrowing the teeth. So they say it won't be ready for a few years, and they don't. It's one of those weird things where they think it works, but they're not sure how. So, or what else might happen, and that's kind of the nature of some of this cutting-edge science. They kind of know what's happening, but they're not sure. So that could be risky.
Maybe the people they tested on, it worked for them, but it might not work for everyone. They better be really sure before they release something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because in reading that little bit about the teeth situation, they were talking about how these scientists and researchers will sit around talking about different dental practices today and say, like, there's got to be a better way. That doesn't seem like a good way to do this. Talking about root canals, that type of thing. But yeah, if you go to the dentist, they're like, "Got to do it. No other way."
So do you believe?
It's always a changing thing, I guess. What they understand changes and develops. So that was kind of interesting. You can regrow potentially some body parts. But the bigger question is, can you regrow a good attitude if you've been coddled your whole life? That's our next story. Coddled kids crumble. Colleges see big lack of resilience among students. And before we get into this article, I just thought I would highlight the meaning of the word coddled. Treat in an indulgent or overprotective way. So that's what we mean when we say coddled.
This article calls it helicopter parenting, so I thought that was really an interesting descriptive term. This article says that many college students are showing an alarming lack of even basic internal coping skills. So when they're faced with even the slightest challenge, a lot of them just buckle underneath it. They go into an emotional breakdown.
And this is what they're seeing in some of these colleges. They're to that age where I guess in most cases they're out of the house. They've got to deal with some real world stress, and they're not handling it well, apparently.
Yeah, this article also says that because of parental failure, just overindulging in just micromanaging every aspect of the child's life, the universities are actually having to play the part of psychologists, proper parents, and then even academic scapegoats. So when these students think they should have gotten a 98 and they're given a 73 by their teacher, the student is expected to flip out. So actually the teachers are afraid of giving a bad grade.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That in a sort of a related story, I guess, it kind of hits on a few things. There was a headline today that some refugees that came over from, I don't know where they're from, but they came over to this country recently, and they were put into a particular school, and they've sued the school system. They said it's not good enough.
I saw that headline.
And, you know, maybe it's not a great school, but again, that kind of reminds me of this because, you know, here you've got the parents jumping on and the kids didn't like something and now they're going to sue the school district. And they're not even citizens yet, as far as I understand. And it's all being given to them for free and it's not good enough. So that's kind of being coddled, I guess.
Yeah, that's a prime example of being ungrateful. And obviously, we know that today a lot of parents just jump to their child's defense as soon as the child has a disagreement with a teacher. This article doesn't entirely blame parents. It's also saying, you know, this society, it's so dangerous for kids now that the parents are being so diligent that the kids never have to make their own decisions. We always see these stories of, you know, different disasters where a child dies prematurely in a tragedy or, you know, even just the influences of screens, having a computer in your room and the different types of things that can be accessed that way. So parents are paranoid of all these threats and they're overcompensating and overprotecting their children.
Yeah, that's well, it's just like that story we read about what's going on in Seattle with that, what do they call it? Oh, the white fragility class. it's a situation where really, instead of people really looking at right and wrong, you know, in bringing up young people a lot of times, it's looking at make sure they're not offended in any way or they're not made to feel bad in any way. And granted, nobody wants to see somebody get bullied or something like that. But if you don't do well on a test because you didn't put in the work and you feel bad about it, that's a good thing because maybe you'll work harder next time. It's not somebody else's fault. It's your fault. That's why you feel bad.
Right. Don't blame the teacher for grading exactly based on the way you performed. This article just talks about how students are demanding that their professors issue trigger warnings before the professor covers anything controversial in the class. So basically, to prevent these kids from hiding under their desk and getting in the fetal position and covering their ears, they say, well, just so you know, kids, we are going to cover some sensitive material, so just brace yourselves. I don't want to see a breakdown.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like that almost seems like it can't be true, but I know that it is because I've seen plenty of reports on that type of thing.
Written resolutions handed out to the professors at a lot of different universities now.
You know what's crazy about that is if you just sit down and you watch some television on a Sunday afternoon, if you turn on a football game or something, there is so much stuff that comes on the commercial break that is horrific, movie previews, whatever. How come they don't give you trigger warnings there?
I know.
They never say, like, hey, parents, just so you know, in 5 seconds, we're going to play a really bad movie trailer so you can get your kids out of the room. They don't do that there, but no. Here they want to give these kids warnings. And that's the thing. What would trigger them? I mean, come on. You know those classes are some of the most, what would you call it? Well, I'll just say this. I don't think there's anything that would be covered that would legitimately cause anyone any problems because they're already having a curriculum that's designed to coddle everyone anyway in a lot of these types of classes, I would think.
Right. A lot of the professors, the majority, are liberal. And the thing is, the students are just putting their professors to shame. They're taking political correctness to such a way higher level that the professors don't even really know how to handle it. This article really does bring out a lot of hilarious examples of people being triggered. A couple students once saw a mouse, dialed 911, and then sought counseling for the resulting trauma.
They saw a mouse?
They saw a mouse, and they were traumatized, so they called and they requested counseling for an apparent case of rodent post-traumatic stress disorder.
Nothing happened to the mouse. They just saw the mouse.
Right.
They saw
a mouse.
And they called 911.
But the thing is, whenever you're coddled and your mommy can run into the room and deal with the mouse when they see it your whole life, you don't really know how to handle a mouse, I guess.
Wow. That doesn't even seem like a real thing, but... I mean, if I saw a mouse, I'd try to get away from it probably or get rid of it. I can get that, but it seems like if you called 911, you'd be fined for like wasting their time.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe the 911 operators are receiving sensitivity training as well to deal with these students.
They send out the mouse patrol. Well, it wasn't Mickey Mouse, was it?
That'd be really sad.
Maybe that's why they were traumatized. They thought all mice looked like Mickey Mouse. This was the real world.
They turn on the light and Mickey Mouse is in the corner just looking right at them. Now that might actually be traumatizing.
That would be traumatizing, yeah. Wow. Well, boy, you know, it seems more and more like you hear stories like this, and it seems like some of these universities and professors are really just babysitters more than anything else in some of these cases.
Right. A lot of students, anxiety disorders have replaced depression. So it used to be that kids would be sad because of a hopeless family life or just a hopeless outlook in general. Now it's an anxiety disorder because the smallest obstacle is overwhelming to all these kids. So that's a pretty big change in the mindset of the young people. This article says, why are they turning to Jell-O when faced with the slightest bump in the road? There's a quote here. It says, students haven't developed the skills to soothe themselves because their parents have solved all their problems and removed obstacles. They don't seem to have as much grit as previous generations.
Yeah, definitely. And I think probably for the parents, I think they think they're trying to be helpful, and probably, you know, like most parents think, well, I'm going to provide everything that I can for my child. And I had something that I didn't like in my life, so I'm going to make sure that, you know, I don't allow that to bother them. But there is a certain reality that life does present challenges. And that's what helps us to grow and improve as individuals, is because we have to deal with those challenges, whether it be through school or through playing a sport or learning an instrument or meeting somebody that, hey, they just don't like you a lot and you got to learn how to deal with it. That's kind of life for everybody.
Right. One of the many excessive blessings that these parents are trying to pour out on their children is shielding them from all failure. Basically, I don't want my child to feel upset for failing a test, so I'm pretty much going to spend 5 hours tonight just basically hand-holding this child through his studies the entire evening.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It is interesting. I think as you do, I have a couple of kids and they're in certain activities, and you do see that to some extent, different kids and I always feel like they kind of know that they can play the system a little bit at times. I know even when I was in grade school, we had a school psychologist that would come around, I think twice a week or something, and talk to us about, you know, if the stranger calls you, don't tell them your parents aren't home. You know, basic stuff they always tell you when you're in grade school. But I do recall that we did figure out pretty quickly that we could manipulate the system by just saying, oh yeah, this makes us sad, and then we could talk about it the whole class and not do any work. And they were just more than happy to be like, because I think they thought, the psychologist thought, like, well, I'm really making a breakthrough here, but we were just playing it for what it was
stalling,
worth. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I would assume that also happens today.
Right, yeah. People, the kids don't want to fail. They don't really want to do a whole lot of work. I think that's a big part of it. You know, maybe the child acts afraid of messing up on his baseball team. He doesn't want to ever strike out, so the parent actually removes the child from it. But maybe the child actually just didn't want to play baseball, didn't have a fear of failure, but the parent didn't want his child to fail anyway.
Yeah, well, a fear of failure, I mean, man, that's not a bad thing to a point. I mean, it could be overdone, but that's what kind of keeps us driving in the right lane, right?
It makes us achieve more.
You don't want to fail in driving correctly and getting a head-on crash. There's a certain danger there that keeps you doing things in a certain way. Well, it's really interesting. Do they offer any hope for the future, or do they think this is going to get worse?
It doesn't look like it's going to get much worse or much better. I mean, sorry. It talks about how the student's emotional fragility has become a serious problem when it comes to grading. So like I said, making teachers afraid to give out bad grades. Kids don't join different activities because they don't ever want to be told they're not doing it well enough. It's really to the extreme now, and all because parents thought they were doing a good job of helping their kids along. So it's kind of sad that that's what happened. At Rutgers, a student article suggested that The Great Gatsby should require trigger warnings because of the violence and the gore in that book.
Which is so funny because, again, what about all the violent movies and TV shows and video games that a lot of young people just consume, like, you know, they're drinking no water?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they should have trigger warnings on that, and that doesn't seem to bother people.
So that's exactly what you're saying. They just don't want to read the book.
Right.
This is something from the 1920s, and they're saying that it's so shocking in 2016 that they can't handle reading it, not seeing it, just reading about it.
Yeah, I think people figure out pretty quickly how they can kind of game the system.
It's working pretty well.
And get through life without, if people are willing to facilitate that sort of thinking, then there's going to be more problems like that. Parenting is not an easy thing, and there are a lot of really good write-ups at thetrumpet.com and pcog.org as well that talk about some of those principles, and so I'd recommend checking those out to kind of counterbalance some of what we see happening here in society. Pretty interesting write-up there. You can read the rest of that from lifeset.com. Coddled kids crumble. That's unfortunate. Here's a couple of other interesting notes before we close today. This is kind of a big story out of Germany. Conservative ministers push partial face veil ban in Germany. They're having, of course, a clash of cultures there, and security officials from German Chancellor Angela Merkel's conservative bloc on Friday proposed a ban on wearing the burqa and other face-covering veils in public schools, courts, while driving, and in other situations. So this is something where, it's a clash of cultures, and as much as people want to say everyone's going to get along and it'll all be great, it's not working out.
Yeah, the thing that actually stuck out to me was the part about not wearing a full veil while driving, because if that thing slips down a centimeter, you're driving totally blind. It would seem like that part, at least, is common sense. But again, it's against that culture for the woman to show her face at all.
Right, and so you have a battle of cultures. You know, who's going to win out in this situation? The article says full face coverings worn by some Muslim women are, quote, not part of our open society, and officials, quote, urge everyone to show their faces. Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière said after meeting his state counterparts from Merkel's conservative union bloc. So what we're seeing in Germany that would be different than what we see here in the States is, in the States, everyone, or at least many of the leading officials, are just like, oh, you know, hey, everybody can do their own thing, and it's great, and we encourage it. And Germany's saying, look, this isn't part of our society. So they're drawing a line between what they consider to be their German society and what these Muslims are wanting to do. They're drawing a line in the sand, which we have not done here in the United States.
Yeah, it probably won't be long before it is done here. There are a lot of people who are trying to be accepting of all different cultures, but the reality is that some cultures will clash. You can't really escape that reality. Walking down the street and seeing people fully, or with their faces fully covered, that's a little bit jolting, especially when you're in a Western society. I mean, you can call that bigoted all you want to, but that is just supremely different from everyone else, and it does kind of make you wonder. I also wonder if there's maybe like a hidden security issue in this. Maybe the veil could be like a Trojan horse for a terrorist. You know, you could just walk down the street and be a harmless woman, but actually it's a man under there, a terrorist.
Yeah, or a woman that's being a terrorist. That has happened. And, well, even here in the U.S., if you go into a bank, they always have a sign up that says you can't come in with your face covered. And I think, I forget all the rules, but I think even wearing a hat, because obviously people come in wearing things and they try to rob the bank.
Yeah.
And so they just say, hey, look, just to keep it on the safe side, don't wear this stuff. So I wonder what happens in that instance if somebody comes in like a burqa or something. Are they allowed to go into the bank here? I'm not sure.
They shouldn't be. I mean, it is the same thing, even if it is part of their culture. The other sad reality is that even just a covering over your face makes people more likely to carry out an attack. It emboldens you to try something because they can't see your face right away.
It's an interesting situation. And again, Germany is kind of, they're still kind of battling about it. They say they can't totally ban it constitutionally, but at the same time, in public locations, they're saying you shouldn't be allowed to wear it. Armin Laschet, a deputy leader of Merkel's Christian Democrats, was quoted Friday in Focus magazine as saying that getting tangled up in such debates was unhelpful for the party. He said the security situation is so serious that we need to fully concentrate on internal security and not on symbolic topics, he said. A burqa may displease some, but it has nothing to do with domestic security. I don't know if they're going to buy that. I think it actually has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that's extremely ignorant to say that that could not be a security issue. That probably is a hidden reason why they're trying to ban it. They're just trying to ban, I think, the full face ones with just the slit for the eyes. They're not even trying to ban the partial face covering, which, you know, is not nearly as threatening to your average person on the street.
They say the proposal still faces several hurdles, including getting Merkel's coalition partners in the national government, the center-left Social Democrats, on board, and then winning parliamentary approval. So it's kind of just being thrown about. But, you know, she has some elections coming up. I think her election's coming up here pretty soon. And so we'll see what the people think about that in Germany. But it's definitely becoming a topic more and more. Last thing we're going to look at today, if you're thinking about moving, you just got to get out from where you are. You might want to go to one of the world's most livable cities. The top 10 most livable cities, none of them are in the United States.
Wow.
Which I found surprising. I mean, I don't know how valid the list is. They get some ideas, I suppose. These are the most livable cities. Number 10, Hamburg, Germany. Mm. So they're having their issues over there, but Hamburg, Germany is considered one of the most livable cities. Number 9, Helsinki, Finland is considered a very livable city. Number 8, Auckland, New Zealand. Mm. And we have some listeners online in many of these places. I know New Zealand, we have some listeners there. So if you're in Auckland, you can pat yourself on the back and your friends. Number 7 is Perth, Australia. Australia had a lot in this list. Mm. I wonder if the list is from Australia, actually.
A little bit of bias there.
they say it's great. Tied for 5th is Adelaide, Australia, and Calgary, Canada. So Canada's got a bunch. If you look at this list, it's mostly Canadian and Australian cities. So kind of interesting there. And then, of course, some from Europe, but the U.S. not having any. 4th most livable city, Toronto, Canada. Quite a few listeners online up there. So congratulations on your 4th place finish. You can send any gifts our way that you may want to. Don't question it. Just do it. Number 3 is Vancouver, Canada. So I always feel bad for them that they lost the Grizzlies all those years ago. They moved to Memphis.
Well, they can't be too sad having such a beautiful city. It is really nice. I've been there before. It's probably one of the very nicest places I've ever been to.
Yeah, some beautiful areas. 2nd is Vienna, Austria. They came in as number 2, and they were just a hair behind the number 1 city that has been number 1 for a while, apparently, Melbourne, Australia.
Mm, yeah.
So have you been there?
Yeah, it's nice.
Is it? Yeah. They had some pictures. I've not been there, but yeah, it looked nice. Mm-hmm. A lot of beaches, a lot of arts, a lot of things to do. Pretty expensive, though, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of places in Australia are really expensive, especially because most of the most easily livable areas are right on the coast. Obviously, those places are going to be more expensive anyway.
Yeah,
I've been to Australia and Canada. It's not really too surprising that those places have the nicest cities in general. American cities, they have a lot of great attractions, but there are also so many dangerous areas there now in general that it's just, in terms of living there, I wouldn't want to live there, but I like to travel there.
Yeah. I think, you know, being considered livable, I mean, there's a lot there. You know, how much is there to do? I think the quality of life in terms of, you know, can you walk places? Can you ride a bike? Can you take public transit? Can you just get out and get active? That's a real difference between a lot of areas. Like even, say, here in the Oklahoma City area, you know, there are some places you can go, but a lot of places you just need to drive. You can't,
right.
You don't, there aren't biking trails. Mm-hmm. There aren't, you do see people biking, but, you know, it's always like bike at your own risk because there's really nowhere to go, and hopefully people see you and try to get out of your way, and because there's not nice trails. But like even, you know, some places out in, say, California by the beaches and things, there's just so much to do outside. You can the weather's great, and you can see why, you know, cities like on this list, people would like to live there.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, Oklahoma is just so spread out. That has its own advantages. People who are more spread out, it's usually you don't find as much crime in those types of areas.
Yeah, always ups and downs. And it's interesting because I think where people grow up has a lot to do with their impression of an area. Mm-hmm. You know, some people have grown up in a certain spot and they think it's the greatest thing in the world, and other people don't have the same viewpoint.
That's what I think about Oklahoma. It's the greatest.
Yeah.
I don't even care what everyone else says.
He doesn't care what you say. This list.
Disregard all the facts.
This list means nothing to Grant. It's Oklahoma City, Edmond.
I'll close my ears and I'll go into a meltdown if you say anything different.
It's a trigger. I should have issued a trigger warning.
You're triggering me right now.
Anytime we have a top 10 list, we have to give out a trigger warning just in case it's offensive to anybody. Those are some of the things that are going on in the world. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and the new Key of David program as well throughout this weekend, and the Trumpet Hour Weekend Review program too. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us this week on Trumpet Radio Live. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.